Never been mic'd up, but I've been locked up several times. Well, my name's Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here this morning. It's an amazing thing, really. I really shouldn't be here. You know, I took this thing, you know, to the almost to the gates of hell, like the book talks about. I'll just get right to it. You know, I grew up here in the in this area. I was over in the Marietta area, went to all my schools in Cobb County. And I started this drinking business. I came from a family that's just really full of alcoholics, you know, mom, dad, grandma, the whole 10 yards, you know, the whole family was just full of alcoholics. And actually my sobriety date is July 27, 2010, so I got a few 24 hours under the belt there. But, you know, I took my first drink at the age of 13. I didn't really have any reasons for it. I was just more curious, you know. With my family, I had an older brother, younger brother. My older brother really picked up and walked with Jesus really all through his high school days. Was a godly man, you know, carried the Bible. I had the opportunity to get in on some of that, and I just, you know, I just it didn't do anything for me. I'd taken that first drink at the age of 13, and I almost died. It literally almost killed me. I mean, I blacked out, did the whole thing. My buddies, we snuck into my buddy's parents' liquor cabinet and went to town on it. You know, there were seven or eight of us over there, and I really almost died. Like I said, I was blacked out most of the afternoon, and ended up getting home, you know, went home and, you know, just lied to my parents about everything, and, you know, from that point on, I consider myself alcoholic as I've reflected back, because most kids at that age that almost died would have probably never gone back and had another drink. But for whatever reason, I liked how that felt, that few minutes of before I blacked out, from the time I drank to blacked out, you know, that period in between, I liked that. I liked that feeling that I'd gotten. So I got right back to it. You know, I was gifted. I was a pretty gifted athlete. I was able to... I started playing sports at an early age. My dad, I came from an alcoholic family, but it wasn't that, you know, that bad. There was a little bit of chaos in the family, but my dad really did everything, you know, that a father should do, other than he drank quite a bit. I mean, when we left the house, there was a liquor store to the right, and the baseball fields were to the left, and I swear our car never turned left. It always turned right to go to the liquor store first. My dad pick up his beer, do his thing, and going down the road. So that's where I started seeing, and I started seeing a lot of, you know, my household at a young age was the household where the family came over to. You know, everybody came over to the weekends. The weekend was the fun time with the grandma, the uncles, and everybody came to my house, and it was a festive party. And for whatever reason, you know, I didn't see the bad times like my older brother saw, because obviously he picked up the spiritual walk, and you know, I didn't see all the bad. I saw all the good times, and that's really what I was after, I think, when I started drinking, was, you know, the good times, the Friday nights, the Saturday nights, the fun times. And, you know, unfortunately, I triggered this alcoholism in me that first time I drank, so I was kind of behind the eight ball already, you know, coming out of life, and already developed that selfish self-centeredness that the book talks about at an early age. I mean, I really tuned in, like, into my middle school days, you know. I really tuned in to, I can remember I look back and really started learning how to manipulate life circumstances, really between, in my childhood days, you know. If dad said no, you know, I ran over to mom and I got the yes, or vice versa, and then I used that to, you know, against him. So I could, right there, I was already developing these skills to manipulate life circumstances and get what I wanted. And that's what I was all about. I was going to get what I wanted no matter what. And that's that behavior. I could start seeing those behavior issues that come along with this disease. And so like I said, I was gifted. I was a pretty good athlete. I got on into high school, and really, you know, it was just, again, it was the fun I was chasing. You know, it wasn't an everyday thing that I drank every day. I mean, I got into high school, and, you know, I go between high school and middle school, I was hanging out with a couple pretty rough guys, and I can remember my dad just really stepping in and saying, "Hey, look, you know, you're going to go on into high school and play these sports, and you know, you're going to have to start separating yourself from some people you're hanging around with," which I really didn't have a problem with. Well, one of them actually died that summer between eighth and ninth grade from drinking and driving. You know, he craved doing 120 and crashed. And even that, as a young man, seeing that just didn't do anything for me. Hey, man, maybe I shouldn't be drinking. You know, it just didn't, that didn't have any effect on me whatsoever, other than I lost a friend. So, you know, when I got into high school, you know, I played quarterback all my life, and then, you know, center field and baseball, and, you know, the basketball coach was wanting me to play basketball. I was going to be a three-sport guy, but really, one of the decisions that stopped me from doing that was my drinking. I had to have some time to have some fun. I mean, you know, in between sports. And so you can see my thinking was already getting jacked up before I even got up to 18, you know, my senior year in high school. So I was drinking. I was a weekend drinker as I got into high school, because sports and all that really played a little, was just enough important enough for me to stay in school, just do enough to get by, so to speak. And you know, and that's what I did, really, as far as school goes. You know, I was a C, D kind of guy, throw a B in there occasionally, just to do enough to get by, you know, just so that I could play on Friday night and I could play the sports. And you know, that's another thing. You know, during high school, if things got tough, or if I had to even speak, do one of these speaking things for a project or something, man, I would not show. I just would not come to school. You know, I would just fake sick or whatever it was to get out of standing up in front of people, because it was uncomfortable. I didn't like being uncomfortable. I didn't get that whole, you know, like, you're going to be uncomfortable in life at times. I didn't get that. You know, I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free all my life and never step through any of the tough circumstances. And I think that's what I did most of my life, really. So once I got an opportunity coming out of high school to go down and play college football, and I thought, okay, great. And, you know, I can remember back, and that the book talks about fear and 100 forms of fear. And you know, I was full of fear in my high school days. And I think I was, and what drove me was really the fear of not producing, or not, you know, at a high level in the sports. I mean, I was the fear. If I didn't produce at a high level, you know, I was full of fear. By Friday night, you know, I was scared to death. I mean, I was a 16, 17-year-old kid. I was 165 pounds soaking wet. And, you know, I had to start quarterback on Friday night, and I was scared to death, quite honest, you know, as I reflect and look back. And I hid behind, you know, I had to hide all that. I had to hide all that fear and everything, because I had to go out on Friday night and lead this team to some sort of victory and then get drunk afterwards. So I had a lot going on, you know, and as a 17-year-old, you know. And so as I got the opportunity to go play college ball, you know, I got away from my parents. I got out of the parents' house. And that was another thing. I didn't stick around my house too much as a young man. Because, like I said, there was a lot of chaos, man. My mom was, man, she ran a tight ship. I mean, you know, that house was clean. I mean, it's almost like she was a Marine, like, sergeant or something. She literally, if she made all the beds up, and if I came home after school and sat on that bed, or one of my friends sat on that bed, man, she would come unglued if we didn't put that thing right back. I mean, she was active alcoholic, and you know, so she was serious about the house cleaning, which I guess today is a good thing, because I brought that with me all those years. I'm alone too as well, and I got to clean my house. So So once I got on down into college, man, the drinking really kind of took off. There was, you know, like I said, my college coach was really the only one that I had to really answer to. And, you know, that was the first time out of the house. And it really, you know, the alcohol at that point, from right as I got into college, really started, I'd say, the gaps started closing, so to speak. You know, I was able to gap those drinking sprees all through high school and middle school. And it's funny, I mean, because I actually got suspended in sixth grade for bringing alcohol to school. I mean, that's, you know, I was already testing the waters and whatnot. So I was getting after it pretty early. And so, yeah, once I started the college ball and got down to college, man, it was on. You know, it was on. I can remember I started drinking just about every night. But I was at the age where, man, I could get up and do the school thing and get on over to practice and do all that, and it wasn't a problem. You know, it really didn't slow me down that much at that age. So I was still wasn't really seeing any consequences or anything like that. And I was in this whole God thing. I was still, you know, I put him in the box and was going to go ahead and live my life the way Mikey wanted to, the way you know, because I just didn't really see. I wasn't going to be like my parents. I wasn't going to be like my older brother. Younger brother really didn't play anything at that point in my life. He was the younger brother. So yeah, I played a couple years of football, and man, it, you know, this alcohol thing really started to steal my soul and started stealing my life, really. You know, I look back and I quit football probably the second summer the second summer I quit football. I just gave it up. And when I gave up football, man, I don't know, I could already feel there was something wrong with me when I left high school, because I was, you know, I was the athlete, man. I did it all. I did the football, the baseball, and the baseball was gone. I started making some decisions that I chose to go down and play college football rather than baseball, so I started sort of regretting that decision. And so I started just really getting uncomfortable. And when I quit football, that just left. I mean, that was the end. That was it. That's what I did for all my life, was sports. And that left a hole that just, I was lost, really. And here I am at Valdosta State College, and I just was lost. And the only way I really knew how to fill that hole was the drinking. I didn't really have a game plan for where I was going in life. I really didn't. You know, I was only down there to school just so I could play football, so I really hadn't even thought about what kind of major I was down there for. So I basically turned it into partying. I mean, because we were wide open. And I ended up, you know, I can remember once I quit football down at Valdosta is when I really started getting into a little bit of trouble. I came home for a summer. Actually, yeah, I came home from summer, and that summer, actually it was a fall quarter. I came home for the winter break. And I had gotten my first DUI on New Year's Eve, and I was only like 18 or 19. And then I turned right back around that was January 1st, but I'm not sure what year, but and then 2 months later, at the exact time, at 1 o'clock in the morning, was it January 1st, March 1st, I got another DUI down in Valdosta. And, you know, at that point, my dad was like, "Are you kidding me?" He goes, and I didn't even have a car. I didn't even have a car. So go figure. You know, my dad was like, "Son, you know, you don't even have a car and you're racking up." And then short, I'd say maybe 12 months after that, I was back home at that point trying to figure things out. And I got another DUI. And still, no car. And it's like, my dad was like, "Man, you're kidding me. You know, what are you doing, son?" And, you know, I was that guy that, heck, if I was going to get in a car with somebody that was drinking, it was going to be me to drive the car. So I was always that guy, "Hey, I'll drive. It's like, man, I didn't, you know, that's the thing. I just didn't even, I had no, you know, laws and stuff didn't even really pertain to me, it seemed like. It's like, yeah, so what? So I got I started suffering some consequences, but my dad, the enabler, really, in my life at that time, I always had somebody in my life that would enable me on to continue on. So he got me out of that trouble. But after that third one, he said, "Son, that's it. You know, you can either stay down in Valdosta and just rot or whatever you do down there, or you can bring yourself on home and get a job with my company and blah, 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 and do the right thing." So I chose that. I came on home, you know, and I went to work for him. And then shortly after that, a buddy of mine I went to college with that I drank with, he had gotten a job with a restoration firm that we traveled all the world, and so I got hooked up with that. Lo and behold, just about everybody that worked out in the field, man, they drink like I did. So I'm like, sweet, you know, I'm making great money, and I'm traveling around the world, and I'm only roughly 20 years old, 21, and didn't have a driver's license, obviously, because I had those three DUIs, but But yeah, it was on. You know, I traveled around the world for 4 years, and man, we drank as hard as we work. You know, that was the motto. You're going to drink as hard as you work. You know, and so that's what I did. And right before that, though, I did get one more alcohol charge. I know I got a I came home again and had gotten a minor in possession of alcohol. And that's kind of funny. When I went, it was a sweep they had in Cobb County, man. They just put a bunch of teenagers in jail that weekend for drinking for alcohol, and I was one of them. And they pad in the paper, yeah, just come to court this certain day if you were caught up in that, blah blah blah, and we'll do whatever. So I didn't tell my parents. I said, look, I'll handle this. I mean, this is like the third charge for it. I was like, I'm not telling my dad. I'm just not even going to tell him. I'm going to come home from school and I'm going to take care of this. Well, I got into court. And my other buddies that were with me, well, the judge, you know, had everybody stand up, and he went down this list, and he got to my name, and he's like, hey, Mr. Whitmire, why don't you go ahead and sit down? I'll be with you in a minute. And I'm like, oh, God, really? So I sat on down, and all the other guys just got a little bit of trouble, a little bit of fine, but, man, he stood me back up, and he threw the book at me because I had to have these two DUIs. He put me on this, oh, I had to go to Scared Straight up in Gainesville, which that, I mean, that freaked me out, but still, you know, like the book says, you know, all this self-knowledge that I was gaining about this disease that the courts were trying to give me, I was like, whatever, you know, whatever, man, just leave me alone. And so really about that point, I'd already had good 4 times in jail for alcohol. So as we roll on there, you know, traveled with that firm for 4 or 5 years, and I finally met someone. And that's really where my life was already starting to get unmanageable. I had a pretty good idea that I had a drinking issue, because even when I was getting in that trouble, the one thing I don't remember is I don't ever remember going to any AA meetings. I don't remember the courts ever saying, hey, dude, you need to go to these AA meetings, or, you know, you need to do this. I remember going to some counseling, but really at that age, man, they were just writing it off as a college kid. Hey, I'm a college kid. This is what you do. You'll grow out of this. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay, cool. You know, not one time did I ever stop drinking through that. You know, not one time. I mean, I drank and continued to drink all through that, even while I was on probation. You know, I just had it figured out. And so that's kind of what I started to do. From about when I was traveling with that firm, I'd met someone there, a significant other, and I really was getting in these relationships today as I reflect back, to have someone manage my life. I mean, literally, that's what I was looking for in a relationship. And I know we talked about in a meeting the other day, in the 12 and 12, it talks about our relationships and how we either dominate somebody or we depend on somebody too much. Well, that was really me. I was depending on other human people to manage my life for the most part. And you'll see as we go on how I really structured all that. And the book talks about how I really became that director and was directing my life and putting people in place and putting things in place and doing things to where I could do whatever I wanted to do, because that's what I did. And, you know, so I met a woman, and she had 2 kids, and I was young. She was a little bit older than me, but she managed my life well. I could do whatever I want. I mean, she paid all the bills. She did this. She did that. She had her 2 kids. She managed those guys, and I didn't have much to do with it. You know, I did what I wanted to do. I did my thing. So I got on. That relationship didn't work out too well after about 6 years. And the way I look at it, really, anyone that was with me during my sickness was probably a little sicker than me, just to even be involved with me. I mean, because I was pretty good. I was hiding a lot of things. You know, I got really good at that kind of stuff, hiding behind things and having folks snowballed. You know, that's really what I did, and that's some of the skills that I tuned into with this alcoholism, was all those skills of manipulation and everything. So on into my that first relationship, it didn't work out. I was probably around 27, 26, called that off, went our separate directions. And right around 25, the age of 25, my mom died of this disease. It was kind of a sudden thing. It wasn't something where she went into the hospital. She was around 40, I think she was 46. And, you know, that took, you know, that, I think about that today, and I had a pretty good idea that my mom was on her way out. She had a lot of health issues. She wasn't, my mom and dad actually divorced after about 25 years of marriage during that time, and she was just struggling, man. She was a housewife all her life, and house mom, and she just didn't develop any skills other than to drink, you know, the booze and the pills. And so we lost her right around, I was the age of 25, and man, that just really, and I was trying to be the big brother to the little brother because they were really close, and he was closed up, and I was closed up. I didn't get all that, you know, feelings thing. I just always buried my feelings and all that. So that's really, once that took off, that really took its toll on me as well. And then the drinking gaps really were closing up. And shortly right after that, I'd met what was soon to become my wife right after that. And man, what a great manager she was. I mean, she was everything that I was looking for in a manager to manage my life. Today, I look at it, did I fall in love? I don't think so, because I didn't know how to do all that. I was clueless of what it took to have or even start any kind of relationship with another human being, because remember, I was that guy that took advantage of, that leaned on you, that really leaned on you, and if you didn't do the manage my life just the way I wanted you to, then you were going to hear about it. So I was so far off from what a good relationship, or healthy relationship I should say, looked like. I had no clue, because my parents didn't show me any of that, none of my uncles. I just had no clue of what that was. And this whole relationship business, as I was growing, was becoming an issue, because I just couldn't maintain. I mean, I just couldn't maintain. And then my closest friends, I didn't have too much problems with, because a lot of those guys, you know, they did what I did, you know, so we were all, and it was all good. They listened well, because we partied. So, you know, once I got married, it was, I started a business, a landscape company, and, you know, it went off pretty well. You know, I got that thing built up pretty good. The marriage was pretty good, you know, from what I could see. You know, she was happy with me. We partied a lot. I mean, that's what we did when we met. We got it on. I mean, she worked for the court systems, and which was another good plus. You know, I just thought of that. Wow, she was a court reporter for a superior court judge down in Cobb County, and so I was like, sweet, it got me some nice connection on the other side there, which I never really had to dig into there, thank God, but because I would have never heard any of it. Never got in trouble in Cobb County. So yeah, right after, about halfway through that marriage, you know, as things started getting, she started seeing, whoa, man, this dude really, really likes to party, and he just, when he starts, he's not going to quit. You know, there was no quitting me, and I never drink just to have one drink, never, not one time. In the 32 years I drink, there's not one time, I can tell you that right now, that I picked up one beer and had that one beer and moved on. Never, 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 never. And so she started seeing that. She's like, wow, because, you know, she partied with me for the first couple years, and then she started wanting to have a family and, you know, do the family thing, and that didn't work out too well. So that was a lot of stress on the marriage. She actually couldn't have kids, but that was my fault because I drank too much. You know, that all turned around, and it was just, our marriage really became a mess. And she finally, I'd gotten one DUI in that 12-year marriage, about halfway through it, and I never heard the end of it. You know, she was just like, oh, I can't believe you do this, can't believe that. And, you know, the sick thing for me is, man, when I met her, this is kind of funny, when I met her, you know, she just couldn't believe how I drank. You know, she just couldn't believe that I couldn't put down the booze for whatever reason. And I, you know, she would ask me point blank, you know, why do you have to have another one? Why do you have, Mike, you always have to have another one. And I would point blank towards the end of our marriage just flat out tell her, because I'm an alcoholic. And I mean, you know, that is just the whole, when I look back on that today, I'm just like, man, how sick is that? You know, I'm an alcoholic, so that's why. And she, you know, what is she supposed to do? Great. Okay, well, great. He's an alcoholic. He ain't going to do anything about it. You know, and she just hung in there and hung in there. But she really started schooling herself, because it's funny, right before about a year, we separated. And when she walked out the door, I stayed at the house because my office was there. I didn't really get on the computer a whole lot, but I thought, yeah, I'm going to jump on. Well, I'm going to have to, because I got to run my business. And she was doing all that, you know. And I just couldn't see. I still couldn't see my life becoming unmanageable. I knew I was alcoholic. I just couldn't see my life becoming unmanageable, because everybody was managing it. And so when she walked out, I got online. I saw what she was Googling. There was a lot of AA stuff, on there. And I was like, oh boy. And I thought, wow. Okay, she's on to something. You know, she's really on to this drinking business, and I may have to do something about it. So I told her, okay, we'll go to an AA meeting. So I went to my first AA meeting with her, and I mean, I was just so far not ready. I mean, it was almost comical. And it's funny, because the AA meeting that we went to was over on Sandy Plains Road, and the house that it was in the house of a buddy of mine that we grew up together drinking. I actually got, the first couple times I really got hammered was in the house where the meeting was. So I'm going, wow. And I still wasn't in tune with this God business. I was like, huh, this is pretty wild. I'm going to just come full circle. I even called my buddy after I left. I mean, hey, dude, you don't believe this, man. I just was in an AA meeting in your bedroom where we dropped acid. And he's like, oh. You know, so it's just, I mean, it was pretty wild how that worked out. So I went in there, and I didn't get it. I wasn't ready to get it. I think I might have read a page of this. My wife was on fire. She thought, man, this is cool. And I picked up a white chip and took it home. And I remember the next morning I got up, she had the white chip up on the mirror. She had actually got it out of my pocket, bam, put it up on the mirror like she's reminding me. So she's on fire for this thing, and I just wasn't ready. And so I really, it didn't slow me down one bit. I told the guys outside the meeting, I said, look, guys, I appreciate y'all's time. I really do. And this would be a great, great place to come if you got a drinking problem. But, you know, that's just not me. I mean, you know, I'm living on the golf course. You know, I've got 5-6 landscape trucks out there running around. I've got 20 employees. I got a bank full of money. I was killing it. In my eyes, I was like, this is great. And, you know, marriage was great, man. I thought everything was great, but it wasn't that great. It really wasn't. That's that delusion that we talk about in these rooms. I was just delusionized. I mean, I was lost. And so she got in tune with it. And finally, you know, I wasn't going to do anything about it. And she filed for divorce. She disappeared one Friday afternoon, and I was looking for her, and I finally ran her down, and she's like, man, I filed for a divorce. And we had separated. I thought, well, wow. I said, I even told her, I said, you know, that's probably the best thing you've ever done in your life. You know, that's how sick I was. I was like, whatever. But it's funny, because the old alcoholic that I was, the ego and all that, man, you know, behind closed doors, I was a mess. Crying, boo-hoo, oh my God, you know, I've lost my manager. My manager's walked out on me. What am I going to do, you know? I mean, literally, what am I going to do? And so I jumped in, and at that point in my drinking career, I could take another person hostage, and I did line up another relationship, and it was all for the wrong reasons. But the woman was beautiful. You know, I was like, wow, this is cool. Man, I'm 39, and I'm dating a 29-year-old. And, you know, again, for all the wrong reasons, man. I was in it for me. And, I couldn't get out of that. And that really kind of turned messy. And I got in a little bit of trouble that. But from the time my wife left to the time I really took my last drink was about 4.5 years, and I'm going to tell you something, guys, that was living hell. You know, it literally left me to my own devices. And when I was moving out of my house, this book here, which saved my life, one of my buddies picked it up and said, you don't need this anymore. And for whatever reason, he tossed it to the side, and I grabbed it and threw it in a box. And thank God I did, because, you know, I had finally come to the crossroads. July 27, 2010, I came to the crossroads of life with this disease. The book talks about, and let me back up just real quick. I did, right before we divorced, my brother's a pastor. I know I mentioned that. He's a pastor, and, you know, I went up to my brother's house with a sincere desire to change my life, really, with my wife. You know, we went up there. I got on my knees, and I prayed with my brother, and I asked Jesus and God into my life that day. And you know, the tears, the crying, and everything was on. And you know, but I was so warped. I had such a jacked up way of thinking, and so spiritually lost that I didn't get none of that. I really thought I'd walk out of that house that night and everything would just change like that, you know, that magical God thing. I thought, man, okay, cool, tomorrow's going to be a better day. Well, lo and behold, it was complete opposite, man. When I walked, and my brother asked, my brother's wife asked him that night, what do you think is going to happen to Michael when he leaves here? My brother knew. He goes, it's going to get a lot worse. We can say that word, worser, than it's going to get before it gets better. But, you know, the spiritual man he is, he goes, but. He had a but in it. He said, but Mona, he has Jesus with him now. And I was like, okay. And great. This God thing isn't working out too well, because from that point to the time I last drank, so I went through divorce. Divorce came right after that prayer. I was like, really? The divorce came. Bankruptcy came. So several health issues came along. I had three major hip surgeries during that time, from the divorce to the time I hit the bottom. Got on the pain pills during that time, man, and I found out that Bud Light, 18 Bud Lights and a couple of Percocet, man, were the bomb, son. I could manage my life. I mean, I felt 20 feet tall, and I could do it all. But that only lasted about 6 months. And so, because I became a pretty angry guy. I lost, during that time, I lost over $400,000 in commercial contracts with my landscape company due to a bad partnership. Divorce came, bankruptcy came. July 25th, 2010, 2 days before that last drink, I got a BUI, boating under the influence. So we're working all vehicles. And son, I mean, that was probably the worst, I mean, of all my DUIs and everything, that I was right there at the end. I mean, I was sick. I was very, very sick. I went up, they took me to Cartersville jail, and I surrendered that night, so to speak, really, with the Cartersville, really with the DNR. The DNR guy was like, God, dude, you're one of the nicest people we've ever arrested. And I was like, well, I thought that was a big deal. I was like, wow, well, check with the guy in South Carolina. He didn't think so. I mean, so, you know, so I went on the car, and while I was in jail, there was a guy in there, and he kept saying to me, Mike, God's going to get you out of here. God, you know, I'm praying for you right now, and I'm sitting there, I'm laying next to a toilet, and I'm just going, dude, would you please, with the God thing, okay? I've got to get out of here. I've got this. I mean, I had people come to my house. It was a Sunday. I had people come to my house. Big party, you know. It was still on. But for whatever reason, when I left that, I got out of jail about 2 that afternoon. I drank 2 more days. And I got a foreclosure letter on that Monday on my house. And for whatever reason, that was it. I was done. It was, I can't remember, Monday or Tuesday, but I was absolutely done. And I got purchased a 9mm that I'd run around with for a couple of years there, and I was done. You know, I came to the crossroads of life. I said, "This is it." And I grabbed that gun. I was heading up the stairs to take my life. You know, I was ready to blow my brains out. And I got upstairs with that gun, and my little dog followed me up there. And I sat on the edge of bed, just in tears. And I looked over, and lo and behold, there's this book. It was on my dresser, and I thought, one more time, and I just thought, and my dog was sitting there looking at me just going, dude, you really don't have to do this. You know, pick that book up, man. Just pick that book up. So I laid the gun down, and I picked this book up here, and what a beautiful book this is, guys. You know, it that my life started changing the moment I picked this button. I was ready. I opened this book up, and you know, the first thing I saw was I saw the doctor's opinion. I was like, okay, cool. And then I read a little bit just right in the front, just of how this book's set up. God did an amazing thing here. He just, you know, it throws out some stats of what this program would do for you and how many people's this. So that, I was all about that, man. I had to see some things, you know. So I had to see the real thing. So the doctor's opinion, I cracked open it, and, you know, it tells me what I've got. It tells me exactly what I've got. I've got a mental, you know, I've got an allergy to this thing. I've got an allergy, and when I take my first drink, that mental obsession kicks in. And this book explains this to you. And I was like, wow. So when I started looking at it from that perspective, I was like, okay. So I've got a disease here. And so then, you know, you read a little bit about that in here, and then you go on, and then the book set up Bill's story. So I read a little bit of that night. You know, and to complete tears. And I thought, okay. And then right after Bill's story, you know, it goes right into there is a solution. And I thought, okay, well, that's really cool, man. I need a solution to this problem because I'm about to blow my brains out. And so that night, you know, and I read this here. I think it's on page 25. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep, effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. And I really needed that, you know. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other, to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. That was a huge deal for me, man. I'd passed through human aid, you know, and I had a little bit of problem. I didn't get this God business, so I was like, rut-row. So I was like, huh. So I at that point, I'm sitting on my bed, and I was like, you know what, I'm all in. I gotta give this a whirl. So I asked God that night, God, please remove the obsession and the desire to drink alcohol. I didn't make any deals with him. I didn't get on my knees. I didn't throw the thou holy prayer. I just honestly was beat and said, please remove this obsession. For whatever reason, man, I went right to sleep that night. Right there on the spot. I went right to sleep. I hadn't gone to sleep like that in years, you know. And I slept the full night. And I woke up that very next morning, and I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to drink. And I thought, wow, because I hadn't woke up like that in probably 10 years. And I actually was able to walk down the stairs and go right by my refrigerator that used to stop me every morning. Every morning at 9 o'clock, 8:30, 8 o'clock. I couldn't get by that refrigerator. For whatever reason, something would just, you know, tick me off, or get on the phone and things wasn't right, I'd go right to the fridge because that was the solution to my problems. And you know, that almost took me, that took me almost to death. So my life started changing immediately. And I thought, wow, and there's power in this book. You know, I didn't go sit in a rehab center. I didn't go talk to really anyone. I rode this ride all the way to the bitter end to where I got enough pain. You know, they say that the pain that you're in is, if the pain that you're in is greater than the pain that's going to be to change, then you probably won't change. But you know, it just doesn't. I was just in enough pain to where, you know, I was going to make a move. So I came to my first meeting here on July 28th. I walked through that. When I walked up out there, I was like, you know, people were laughing and joking around. I thought, man, this is not funny. You know, I'm not very happy. You know, I'm just not very happy. And so I came in these rooms, and, you know, you guys read the promises, and, you know, that was a huge deal. You know, when I heard that, I was like, that's what I want. You know, that's what I want. And then you guys told me to go on, and, you know, when I first came here, I read the first 164 pages, and, you know, as I got into the 164 pages, this whole other thing about, you know, this book's just set up so awesomely. You know, right after the solution, you know, it tells you a little bit more about alcoholism, and then it'll go on and tell you about if you do have a little God issue or you're not right on board with them. It's got a chapter on We Agnostics about that. You know, as I started reading this more, where it gets to the part, and I was so shocked about this. Yeah, right here, page 62 and 63. Selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles. Man, that blew me away. You guys told me my selfishness, self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. And, you know, I thought I was the nicest guy. I thought I was the coolest thing since sliced bread. You know, I thought I was it when I got here. And, you know, I really got downsized when I came to these rooms, and that's what I needed. And I had the ego, you know, just all that. But really, by the time I got here, it was blown out of the water. I was ready. They say what when the student's ready, the teacher will show up, and he showed up. You know, he was right here. And I was instructed to get a sponsor, so I seeked out a sponsor. You know, I found someone, which was kind of, you know, I found someone that was really totally different from me. You know, he really had 10 years younger than me, but he had been in this room for 3 years at the age of maybe 27, I think he was, when I asked him to sponsor me. You know, I'm 42, and here I am asking, you know, a 27-year-old, but I saw in him what this program had done for him. And I thought, wow, at 27, man, if that guy's got this at 27, you know, this stuff works. Because 27, man, I was so far-fetched from trying anything like this. I mean, I was like, no way. So as a result of finding my sponsor, we sat down, and he was the first person that this whole relationship thing that I could really sit down and build a relationship with and lay everything out there where he knew who I was. You know, he knew who I was. And then as a result of working these steps, this God business, I started really seeing what was going on there. God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I really, my life started changing. My life started changing, and just like the book says. And that's just the beauty of this program. You know, I had to sit down in the 12 steps, working with a sponsor. I was able to, all those resentments, all that trash and garbage that I had in my life, I was able to work through it and self look at myself and take everybody else out of the picture, which for me was like, wow, I don't have to worry about anybody else, because I was caught up in all that too, man. I'd fix you, fix this, fix that, please you, do this. I mean, that's what I did. I was just all about pleasing everybody and doing everything to fix you and not fix me. So the first, you know, and then the book says, man, I got to this stuff at once. I mean, I didn't jack around, man. Me and my sponsor here, man, we got on it. I was probably, we worked these 12 steps in probably 10 weeks, I think, somewhere along that line, maybe a little bit quicker, man. I was on it. I was like, hey, what are we doing next? What are we doing next? You know, I wanted relief, and this program gave me that relief that I was searching for. It gave me that peace that Karen was talked about. I've been able to pick these spiritual principles up and work them in my everyday life, these 12 steps that are on this wall. You know, the book talks about that as well, as, you know, the spiritual advice, this God thing that fixed my drinking problem actually fixes all my problems today. You know, the second I wake up, he's my first contact. You know, I say the third, seventh, tenth, well, 11th step prayer, the second I open my eyes, you know, it's, hey, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God, I want to turn my life and my will over to the care of you today and pray for the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry that out today. And I go right down that little prayer list before my feet even hit the ground, because you guys told me, and which I believe today, this drink, this alcoholism is nothing to do with that drink. It's all about my jacked up thinking, and for me, it's all about my behavior problem. I had a serious, serious behavior problem when I got here. I mean, to the point to where, you know, I was a 12-year-old kid locked up in a 42-year-old body. And I had searched out the solution for all my problems through doctors. Man, when I came here, I was taking antidepressants. I was taking anxiety medication, high blood pressure medication. I was taking cholesterol medication. I was washing all that down with a 18 to 24 Bud Lights every day. And I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. Well, dude, look what you're doing. You know, look what that was my answer to all my problems. And my doctor was like, dude, have you tried an AA meeting? Nah, dude, just right, give me that prescription and I'll take care of it. You know, I was dosing myself, man. If I didn't feel just right, I'd take two of the red ones, one of the yellow ones, you know. I was working it, and, you know, it's a wonder I didn't die right there on the spot. But when I got these rooms, you know, 3 months, the power I found in these rooms, I don't take none of that stuff anymore. I got taken off all those medications like a month after I got in these rooms. And my doctor was like, whoa, wow. And today I don't take anything. Man, I wake up, I hit, you know, this thinking problem. I've got these spiritual tools that I picked up. The book talks about it. I mean, I read it. You know, there was a choice I had there. And I picked up these spiritual tools. And I'm able to work them in my everyday life today and to keep me grounded. And I think that one of the coolest things, too, reading it at the end of this here, there's so much good stuff in here. I could sit up here all day and speak and talk about it, but we do have a time limit. And, you know, this right here at the end, the very end, page 164, I mean, that right there figured out my life. Up to all of my alcoholic problems, about a week of time, 32 years, was figured out right here in these 164 pages. This right here has changed my life. And right here at the end of the last page says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in the morning, in your morning meditation, what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Dude, that is amazing. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So guys, if you're new in here and you're struggling with all this, you know, keep coming back. Or the other answer is go back out and drink until you get to the point to where you're ready to change. That is the sad. That's what worked for me. I came in here. I didn't buy into this. So I went out and I kept trying to control drink and control drink. And by God's grace and mercy and all of that, I made it back here. You know, those are the two choices. There's no other way around it. It's this program worked for me. It changed my life. I'm so grateful to be here today. And, you know, really thank you guys for coming here this morning. That's all I got.